Hi, this is Jeff Siegel, the wine curmudgeon, and today we're talking to Mike Martini, third-generation winemaker from California, from Sonoma and Napa. I was going to get that in there. Mike. One of the most famous names in California winemaking. Mike, thank you very much for being here today.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
All right, so I have two questions before we start and talk about your wines, one of which is... Do you have any good stories about beating up any of the Mondavi or Gallo children?
Now, actually, Gallo's did not live in Napa Valley. That's where we live. But yes, Tim Mondavi. And I, a fellow named Larry Merla, whose father was the winemaker for the Napa Valley Cooperative, and another guy named Nico Schock, whose father ran the Estelian estate, as a vineyardist that is now known as Tokalon. We all used to play together, and our fort was Farniente. And the Farniente Winery, you couldn't see it from the highway at all, and it was collapsed in on itself. So Gil Nichols did wonders to this place. That's where we used to get our spears and go after each other and play cowboys and Indians and stuff.
All right, and then one other very important question, because I have a lot of friends who think this is a very important and crucial issue. Who makes the best sauce among all of the Italian patriarchal California wine families?
We do. The 600-year-old recipe.
See, people always go, Jeff, why do you ask that question? I always go, because I know there's a good answer to that. All right, let's talk about some wine here, Mike. Is there a style that you can describe, the Martini family style? You've been doing this now for three generations.
Actually, yes. That's a much better question than you know. Very few families have actually taken it to that extent, three generations. And I always comment that you'll see the chateaus change hands in France, but you don't see the winemakers change hands. So it's the same family, the lineage. And when you taste a vertical of you know, French wine, it's the same thing that we've accomplished in ours. My last name is Martini. I was weaned on Louis Martini wine. And whether it was my grandfather, my father, or myself, there's a signature that's always called Martini. That, in combination with the fact that we've used a lot of the same vineyards all these years, you know, draws this stylistic, and I call it elegance. I never really professed to get on the big fat cab wagon that a lot of people get onto. Part of what I know is that acid is what helps a wine age. Our reputation has been always to have drinkable wines up front that do age, and I think we've got many vintages to prove that. So that's something that came through all of us. This style, this taste that's in your head, which is when you're always making it against an internal standard. This taste is the Martini style. And I just challenge you to buy enough of it and drink it that you learn what it is.
Well, I think one of the things, and I don't want to get too technical here, but I think when we talk about tannins, which is the harshest, the astringent part that makes your mouth pucker, that your wines always seem to have a more sensible approach to tannins than everybody else.
Well, my father actually was the master of balance. You know, I call him actually the master of silk, because he made wines that were like silk. And it is how you balance the components, the fruit, the acid, and the tannins in the wine. You can have a lot of tannin, but everything else has to come up to balance. You just have a more concentrated, richer wine then. And if you play that right, then nothing shows up. If you have too much tannin in the beginning, you're going to have too much tannin at the end of the process.
All right, so Martini's known for red wines, obviously. And today we're here at the Wine Therapist in Dallas, and we've tasted some very nice Cabernets. If you had your druthers, what kind of wines would you like to make? I know most winemakers have other things they like to make besides what they make because that's what sells.
Well, I like to play around, to tell you the truth. I have a little experimental winery we call Cellar 254, and every year we have an emerging varietal program where it doesn't matter where we get the grapes, but I can't even pronounce half the grapes that we crush there. And we'll do a ton or 2 tons or 3 tons of entirely different flavor profiles. Now, it's not the best wine. We usually only make it for 1 year, but at least we all get to see what it's like. You know? So I said experimentally, if I had to chase something, Cabernet is the king of reds, but I also like Pinot Noir a lot too.
But is that the idea that if it's fun for you, if it's fun for you to make wines that are different than most people drink, because this is a pet peeve of mine, shouldn't wine drinkers be willing to try different sorts of wines?
Absolutely. Oh, you want me to elaborate on that?
No, you're shaking your head yes. It's just nice to have a Martini agree with me about that.
That's what I say, shaking, not stirring.
The other thing I wanted to ask you about was, we were talking a little bit earlier while we were tasting the wines, that you'd had some Texas wine last night. Can you give me a sense of the wine you tasted? And you've been tasting Texas wine off and on for several years down at the Hill Country Food and Wine Festival. Have you noticed some changes in Texas wine?
Well, they're getting better, and I think that probably the biggest work is in the varietals that they're picking. They're picking varietals that are more fit to the climatic conditions down here. I had a Cabernet Tempranillo blend last night, and I thought the Tempranillo was terrific in it. The Cabernet still had a little bit of a green tone that you get in hotter areas with Cabernet. So I think as they explore Sangioveses and Tempranillos, and if they could bring them nearer to Avalo and some of the other varieties that grow very well in hot areas, you know, that they're going to have better luck.
All right. Your advice for people who don't drink a lot of wine, who are just getting started drinking wine, what are the one or two things that you would suggest that they could do to really learn about wine?
Number one, experiment. Experiment with food, if possible. And don't spend too much money on the wine, because if you feel like you get burned, you're not going to want to come back.
You know, I'm glad you said that, because once again, that's something I talk about a lot, and people still seem to think that they have to spend a lot of money for quality wine. And I know we were tasting the beginning wine in your line, which is about $17, and I've always found that to be a very fair value over the years.
But you find that when you get into the bigger wines price-wise, or bigger wines mouth-wise, too, they have a lot more tannin, they're a lot harder to chew on it. And a lot of that is a learned taste. You know, you learn to like that astringent sort of drying character in the mouth with the tannins. And that's why I say do it with food, because that really helps offset it, and that tannin actually marries the wine to the food and allows the berry components of the wine to show up more. Where if you don't have food, the tannins have a tendency to get the better part of your palate. So.
Yeah, kind of overwhelming. So that's one. What would be the other key piece of advice?
I would start with something you like maybe people have an evolution of taste. You'd start with something a little sweeter, maybe even white wines and blush wines and rosés. Rosés are really coming back strong now, and they're beautiful wines, you know, at lunch and whatnot. I'd stay away from anything that's extreme, either high acid or high alcohol, or too much oak. I would try to go for the fruit and learn what the basic varietals need up front. And the real important point is to enjoy it.
And as I always say, the best piece of advice is drink a lot of wine.
Absolutely. It's the only way you're going to learn. In fact, that's more important than you know.
All right. Well, listen, Mike, I appreciate you coming here to do this. You'll be down at the Hill Country Food and Wine Festival over the weekend, mm-hmm. if I'm not mistaken.
We'll be pouring. We'll have a table there.
Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate you doing this.
Oh, thank you for having me.
And it was a pleasure. This is Jeff Siegel, the wine curmudgeon. May your glass always be full, and may you always enjoy who you're drinking wine with.